space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, are Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Dragon!
And after our brief soiree into Deep Space Nine, we're back on Prodigy, and we've got another two-parter to cover. This time it's Ascension.
We do also have the briefest of Trek news. Star Trek Day.
Oh, it was Star Trek Day, yeah.
It's the 58th anniversary, I believe it was.
58th, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really all I've got to say, because they did fuck all for it this year.
But, they did nothing.
But it was a thing.
They did another little teaser for Lower Decks, didn't they?
Yeah, and the poster's been released now.
Yeah, but it wasn't a lot.
Why not just do what they did like in previous years and get a few of the stars, just do a bit of an event? They don't have to do it as long, but just like a two-hour event would be something.
You've got this massive franchise that millions of people around the world follow. You've got a built-in audience.
I mean, it's basically that.
I wonder if
Frasier and maybe Murder, She Wrote, the people going to Paramount Plus.
I wonder if subscriptions of Paramount Plus have literally gone like that while there's no Star Trek on.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. It's one of their main draws.
And why they've maybe not done anything, because there's no Star Trek, new Star Trek showing on there. They haven't got the subscriptions at moments.
No.
You do the victory lap, though. That's when you do it the most.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at those amazing shows. These last few series.
Yeah.
Did you realize that Callum Keith Renee, who's like been everything, was in the last series of Discovery? Did you realize, remind them, as well as showing all the trailers?
A teaser trailer for Academy would have been nice.
Bit of footage from Section 31, which actually tells us anything about the show,
Yeah.
There's so many things they could have peppered it in with.
Yeah, since they've started production of Academy, even if they just had a 15-second quick bite of something they could show.
Yeah.
Just even someone going into the doctor's, office, him turning around and going, what is the nature of the academic emergency, whatever.
Yeah, whatever it is.
That would have helped people freeing themselves, me included.
Yeah, they could have done something, but they didn't. So that's why it's only brief Trek news. Anyway.
So I thought you mentioned at least.
Unlike Paramount Plus, we've still got Prodigy on Netflix, and we're working our way through that. Two-parter again. And this is a lot of action in these ones.
I was drooling from start to finish.
And unlike a lot of episodes where they've done two parts and part of the story, these you couldn't literally put as standalone. I think you would you could maybe start it, but you would have to watch the next episode. It isn't bookended in the way
it has been. It's very much a 45-minute episode, but because it's...
Yeah,
the show's 22 minutes, they've cut it in half.
We're very much in the end of the season as well, and it literally does keep going now till
this is ramping it up a lot,
and it is so damn impressive. Like, I remember thinking when I finished this series, like, how much did they manage to cover in one series? How many goodies do you get in the bag of one series? And then watching these two parts on their own, though, it's like it's even more impressive that what they get into two episodes alone, let alone the whole series. It's just dripping with content and with cool ideas and moments, which I welled up at so many moments.
There's a really, really funny callback in this episode as well. I don't know if you noticed it.
I mean, without knowing which one you're thinking of, because I noticed a... nod to Enterprise in there.
No, it's a massive nod to DS9.
Okay.
Oh, interesting.
Huge nod.
Right. Well, I'm sure you'll flag it up when we get there.
I will.
So the first part starts with Dal making a personal log. Now, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I thought this was interesting because up until now, Dal's been calling them captain's logs. And he is on the protostar, so he could be calling it a captain. I know technically he's not in charge, but I thought that was telling of Dal's character arc and where he's at, that he's starting to move away from this idea that I'm the captain and he's starting to explore maybe what else he could be. And I thought that was just a really subtle way of putting that in by having him, it's my
person. So him fitting into a command structure himself.
That yeah.
Isn't the cap? He's up back on, he's got away with it on the protostar when they've rescued Jacoby, but they haven't had long from there to get him back. And
yeah.
He's still been pulling this captain thing, but Jacoby's been doing a bit of mentoring. I hate saying that.
He's been doing good things. He's been doing great.
But wait, now he's back at Voyager, he realises, yeah, I'm a cadet. I can't say I'm the captain.
And that's
it's his character arc and it seems showing him growing.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's even beyond being in like a cadet, because he was a cadet at the beginning of the series. I think it's just his emotional growth that like and what I loved about the series is like everyone fits into a role which they seemingly fit really well. And then the more you get to know them and they get to know themselves in the context of Starfleet, that isn't too wanky a term. I love the fact that they go, no, actually, maybe
yeah.
This. Like, okay, I look like Rock. I look huge, but it doesn't mean I've got to be in security. Like, yeah, it's about people going beyond what they seem to be to other people.
Going beyond stereotypes.
Yeah.
The stereotype. And then, no, they're not that stereotype, actually.
And I think... Yeah. In this episode, they very pointedly position the characters in where they're supposed to be, and we'll sort of dig into that as we go through it.
Even in the log at the beginning, though, it's like the way he's talking is different. It's not like
exactly.
Usually, he's talking as if he's a captain delivering the information, where he's just going, saying, "Isn't it just great to be here, home? It was such a journey, you know. The way he's talking is different as well.
It's less the fact that." He's acknowledging it within the command structure that I'm not the captain. I wouldn't be making a captain's log. It's that on a personal level, he's going, I'm going to call this a personal log. So you could call a personal log captain's log and nobody would be able to call you on it. But it's the fact that he has chosen to call this his personal log rather than a captain's log that is telling of where he's moving. So the setup basically is everybody's working on fixing everything right at the start. We've been through a lot. We're trying to get everything up and running. I'm sure by the end of this two-parter, no disasters will befall them and it'll all just be plain sailing, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
So we do get a bit of downtime to begin with, and it starts with Majelle on the holodeck flying the fighters.
And this is where we get the lovely call back to DS9.
Go on, then.
So we've got the three cadets who are flying.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Michelle and one of the others that are doing all the chatting about what they're going to do and everything. And he about to start doing the manoeuvre. And he turns to the other one and goes, right, we're doing this. Stop all the chitter-chatter. And that's Krom, who's the same species as Morm. From DS9, and all the way through it, she never says a word, but she gets told to stop your chitter chatter as if she talks all the time. And we get that with Morn that the main count is talks all the time, but all through DS9, he never actually says a line. And I just thought that was a lovely little callback that if you're into Star Trek like we are, you spot things.
Because I didn't notice particularly this episode they got to feature that character more not saying anything, which was really nice. But I didn't notice that line. But it's like you also get in this, I think it's in the same bit of dialogue, they talk about manoeuvres, or is that later on?
No, the Boothby manoeuvre, the Starburst manoeuvre,
I think it's mentioned.
The Boothby manoeuvre's right at the end. It's the Boothby Starburst or something that they use.
Yeah, you're about to do the manoeuvre. To practice the maneuver when Dal walks in.
Right, so but it's nice they do these little, again.
So it's bookended what they're going to do in practice. At the end of it, they actually do in reality.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it's almost like where Lower Decks is kind of famous for doing these kind of like really kind of, you never think they'd call out that weird episode thing. Like they're doing it here, but just subtle. You know, it's just it's more kind of like you don't notice it. You know, every time they're doing one in Lower Decks, even if you didn't know, like, I think we pretty much know all the... Every now and again, one of us will pick up and one the rest haven't.
Yeah.
Pretty much we get them all. Here, they're just littered equally throughout as well, but it's just more sort of peppered in there.
Yeah. And meanwhile, you've got Zero... Basically, the Doctor's working with Zero, and Zero's body's on its way out, effectively. Oh. But the Doctor says, well, I can build a new one if I work with the Daystrom Institute and blah-de-blah-de-blah. And this is the start of where I think it's really positioning the characters as to what their vocation is, really. That they've got... Zero says, no, I want Jankum to do it because I trust Jankum to do it. And it's the first one of the cast that's getting sort of put into their right place. And I really like that it's showing the trust that's built up between the characters and the fact that that's even superseding the existing command structure. Like, you've got the Doctor is willing to say, yeah, okay, if you trust Jankum to do this, let's have Jankum do it, which I think's it's really empowering for the characters. And I think there's a lot of that with the other characters that we go through in this episode.
I mean, I thought it was perfect. The only thing I did think is maybe if you didn't have so many other beautiful things happening in this episode, you might have explored a little. Like, I could imagine an earlier draft maybe had Jankum a bit more worried and, like, expressing how worried he was about being given such a big responsibility. But I understand why you didn't have time in this episode. But it's like, they do kind of nod to it at the end where it goes, it's like, oh, no pressure on Jankum Bog then. You know, but,
yeah.
But it was kind of interesting. It's like, because it's just so full, like you didn't even have time for that.
Yeah.
Well, when it was sort of like when the Doctor sort of like let it be a Jankum project, it's assumed that he's got time to work on it and all that.
Yeah.
And not, you've got minutes.
I mean, it's just, it's so this show to have it like. Because, of course, like anyone else, any other crew, they're going, Daystrom Institute. Of course, they've got experts who've worked on this ship for years. But they're going, no, I know what my friend can do. I know my boy's got this. And I know with him there's no strings attached as well, I think's implied. Like, there's no going to be any trying to abduct my body for science or, like, have any controls put in there for whatever, you know.
Yeah. And we get a nice scene between Janeway and Chakotay where... they're having this chat about how they've both travelled across time now, and she references Admiral Janeway in the uniform, and there's a nice little reference where it says, well, we did base these designs on what we saw from future Janeway, which is a lovely little...
Which means I like the uniform, which gets used in All Good Things as well, like they're responsible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's that sort of like... It's almost like, all our fashion designers have run out of ideas now, so anything you can steal from an alternate reality, we'll have a bit of that.
do you think she sent through the blueprints to Picard, and he's going like, no, I'm sure it was a little pointer at the end, and a little bit more like they're arguing over it to get it right. But two things in this scene. One is you get, this is the Enterprise nod, because you get Dakota going, oh, it's been a long road getting to here.
Yeah.
Which, come on, that's too close to be a coincidence.
There's nods. It's like you said, there's lots of nods in this to other episodes and other shows that we've seen in the franchise, but it's done a lot more subtle than Lower Decks. Lower Decks, we expect to see all these...
That's what you want,
Lower Decks is full of it, that's going to do it, but you don't expect it as much in Prodigy, so it's nice that's when you thing. See it.
I think that's the thing. I think Prodigy does it as much, but where, like I was saying, like Prodigy peppers it, I think Lower Decks more put chili sauce on it, you know, it's like, you're gonna notice it more. It's more obvious that it's a reference, even if you didn't know the reference, you know that they're referencing something.
Yeah.
The other thing was, and I messaged you guys last night.
Can I just point out that our love for Chakotay is obviously well known, because we've got Jody in the comments saying Chakotay rules, and
well,
then
we
we've
know
got
what she thinks of it.
Then we've got Kimberly just saying Chakotay. So I don't know how we're attracting all the Chakotay fans, but we will never turn away listeners.
Jody, is that your second profile? Now be honest with us, we won't judge you if it is, but
carry on, sorry.
No, it's just a bit.
Are you suggesting there, Squee, that there's not two people who are actually fans of Chakotay?
I think Jody fancies him so much that she wants to show her love in multiple accounts. That's my theory.
It's Robert Beltran. He set up an account just to come on and say Chakotay.
No, do you know what Jody specifically said? Robert Beltran, no, Chakotay all the way. It's the tattoo. Like, it's that adds it to it.
That's it. Absolutely.
And the cultural insensitivity. I think she said she was a big fan of. I'm joking, Jody. I'm joking, of course. But no, there was another bit which we've said before, how much we love a bad laugh in Star Trek. And of course, the master of this craft is Kira.
Of course.
If you go into this episode, the bit where Chakotay and Janeway are talking about Admiral Janeway, and she goes, it's like, well, it's not every day you see yourself in the future. Now, that's a wry kind of fine thing to say, but it's not really something which requires a laugh afterwards. But no. They wrote one in, and she goes through, it's like,
what's
it's just
amazing,
a bit wooden. It's not, you know, quite
the thing is that levels, but it's another one of these subtle nods to something. It's got to me, because this is an animated show. They have deliberately animated it to look wooden.
Yeah, it's a tone of voice. It's like the whole performance. I mean, again, she's working with what she's got. It isn't a line which deserves a laugh. So you've got to do a forced laugh, and just no one sounds good with those. Just a right smile would have been so much better in this scene, but it's written.
It would.
I think it's about a 7. Like, it's not the most in your face. It's a 7 on the Kira laugh scale.
Yeah, no, Kira is the master of it all. So there's another little callback at this point, where there's a shot of the Voyager and the Protostar flying together, sort of away from the camera. And to me, that looks framed and everything exactly as in Star Trek 6, where you have the Excelsior and the Enterprise A flying together.
Didn't think of that.
And the proportion of the ships to each other is the same as well. Yeah. So you have this big hulking ship of the Excelsior, which is like representing the future, and you've got the Enterprise, which is at that point representing the past. And yeah, again, this is too close to that for it not to have been deliberate.
And might I add with that scene, that shot, like we've said all the way through how great the animation is and the space shots especially. Mm-hmm. I think like this is better than some Deep Space Nine. Like Deep Space Nine, don't get me wrong, they had some wonderful battle shots and everything, but they had some ropey CGI in some episodes. Like, this looks better than, like, just to consider, if you think for the time of any of the versions of Star Trek, I don't think this is the worst effect. If you put this in a live action in this day and age, I don't think it would look out of place.
It'd look better than anything we got in Discovery.
Well, that too. You know, it's like you've got to see any detail for a start. You know, that's a closer example. But I'm just saying, it's like, but even for the time, Deep Space Nine.
What's the DS9 documentary? What We Left Behind. When they did the remastered footage, that looked amazing. But DS9 is a victim of its time for what you could do with CGI.
Yeah, of course it is.
Oh, I would even say, though, for the time, there was a few of the effects they used. There was one bit where the Defiant goes into the sun. It looked on Babylon 5 scale, which I enjoyed but it was known for ropey CGI.
It was TV CGI, you know.
There was better at the time. They used better in other episodes of their
also, I take exception to that. DS9 never looked as bad as Babylon 5 in terms of the effects.
Okay.
And I love Babylon 5. It's a fantastic show, and I'm not decrying it at all, but the effects were of their time.
All right. Look up the episode where Bashir's evil counterpart flies into the sun. It looks like shit. It looks, it is on Babylon 5 level. Most of the time, Deep Space Nine wasn't. I'm just saying, in that episode, man, whoever worked on that should have just been fired.
Well, strong or words.
Given a better budget.
Strong words.
No, okay, no, I take that back. That's so mean.
Like, no, no, that's it. That man never worked in Hollywood again.
And that was your fault.
Actually.
Yeah. It was whatever your 15-year-old me. That's what.
Actually, he went on to do the CGI effects for the Scorpion King in The Mummy Returns. So. Anyway. Jellicoe, then we get another little cameo from Jellicoe, which is always fun, and he's back to his kind of boo hiss villain ways now, because Starfleet is taking over the mission at this point.
I'm confused here because it's the same rank as Janeway, yeah. He's giving her orders constantly,
isn't he? A high ranking admiral, I thought.
And I suppose it depends what you're in charge of, doesn't it? Like, Janeway might be in charge of. I reckon they've given Janeway a nice safe job that keeps her away from doing all silly. You know, it's like she gets back from the Delta Quadrant. Like, we're going to have to promote her to admiral, but we don't want to do an all that's going to get people in trouble. So.
Like, let's be fair. They've given her a desk job. The first time she's got hands on a ship, she's lost Jacota through a time accident.
Yeah,
she's lost the Prometheus. She's in chasing it. She's nearly caused the entire Federation to be wiped out, and now she's on a second ship, and she's caused a time disruption that's going to nearly wipe everything out.
I have a better theory, guys. I think it's a lot simpler. I think Harry Kim, once he got back to the Alpha Quadrant, still not promoted. Put in a call to Libby, his ex, who's now high up in Starfleet, and said, it's like, okay, I hear she's getting promoted to admiral. It's like, no, don't stop the promotion. What I want you to do is just give her a desk job, make her a low ranking admiral so she can't get shit.
Yeah.
Sorry. You did once say, if there's anything I can do after remarrying after you disappeared. Sorry. This is my one. I'm calling it in.
It's like where people get an executive producer credit on a TV show, but they don't actually have anything to do with it. It's that level of admiral that they've pushed Janeway into, I think.
The admiral.
I just want to say here, Jordan, we're not dissing Babylon 5.
We're not dissing Babylon 5.
We all love Babylon 5, but Babylon 5, it's graphics, it's CGI, has
they
not
were
stood
not.
The It didn't look great at the time. But Babylon 5 is such a strong show. It's stood without having strong CGI.
They made a choice at the time, which was we can either use models and they're not very dynamic, or we can go poor CGI, but we'll be able to move them and do what we want with them. And that's the route they chose.
Yeah.
And that came with the limitations that it came with, but it doesn't detract from how great the show is.
In fact, I've always said if a film and or TV show doesn't manage to surpass the CGI, like, so once it's any effects will get dated at some point in most films. So it's like, if it can't still be a great story beyond that, it's like, I mean, apart from Fast and Furious, obviously. Yeah, but
of course, yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't mean a plot. That just needs things explaining.
It's kind of like Iron Man and Spider-Man. It's like, you know, if you're nothing without the suit, then you don't deserve it.
I've always thought that about TV and film, actually. You're right. I take the Spider-Man approach.
There you go. That's it. Okay, so Chakotay and the Andorian guy straight away are like, yeah, I agree. Let's give the mission back to them. Forget it.
Yeah, that was very quick.
I'd have expected better from Chakotay at this point. So he's in the bad books again.
Yeah, I can understand the Andorian guy, but Chakotay.
Yeah.
Or do you think Chakotay's just scared because he's just spent 10 years on his own?
Yeah, I think Chakotay's like, I just want to get back.
And is Chakotay now older than Janeway?
It's like, I want to get back to my racially sensitive reservation back on. I want to go back to running a casino.
I was thinking about the acing, because, like, is it just me, or does it look like he's been animated at exactly the same age he was?
Yeah, yeah, all they've done is put a bit of grey in his hair, but they've used the exact same model. Well, they've not done anything.
Like, Janeway looks like she's just aged really well, you know, it's like, whereas he just doesn't look like he's been made to age.
Again, it'll be Beltran, he'll have it in his contract, he's like, you make me look young. I want to look like all my fans remember me, all two of them.
Also, I love the fact that just in this one specific, this is one of my only kind of flaws in this episode, was like, previously they rebelled. There was another time when they said to Janeway, it's like, you know what, if you want to fuck Starfleet off, we don't give a shit, we'll do
it. They were up for it.
In this situation, suddenly it's like, well, we couldn't do that one more time. Like, eight is our limit for rebelling against Starfleet and doing whatever the hell you say, even though you didn't ask us to on one occasion and we volunteered anyway. But
they're all just really high off the victory of getting Chakotay back. They're like, we've got Chakotay back, we don't care if the universe is destroyed, we've got the man back.
And it's sort of like, do we use all Starfleet's resources to fix everything, or do we just trust you, who has a record of violating temporal directives?
Fair point.
I'm going to say, alternatively, they've gone, you know, before when we said we just go rebel and everything, and we did, and we got Chakotay back, let's not do that again. Like, maybe
that's bad. Who's she going to bring back next time? Oh my God, it's Travis Mayweather from Enterprise. Ah!
Oh no, you saved Lutan from Code of Honor. No!
Oh, Lutan. That's who they should bring back. You've brought back the outrageous O'Connor. Let's bring back Lutan.
Oh. I would love an episode of Lower Decks.
We still haven't dared do that, touch like, that episode.
No.
They did an episode of Lower Decks where they go, it's like, they make a reference to Code of Honor, and then someone goes, oh, sorry, we haven't got time for that cutaway, and just move on with the episode.
Yeah, or they go back to the planet and, like, it's now, like, a really equal society and very diverse and everything. That'd be interesting.
Is the only show which could rescue, like, that plot line.
It'd have its work cut out for it. But, yeah, that's the challenge. Season 5, Lower Decks, you've got to redeem, you've got to make us watch Code of Honor.
We fully know what she's capable of doing with the temporal
prime directive
whole thing.
Yeah.
But no, I just love it. If they're on the way to the Code of Honor planet and all the way through the journey, everyone is just going, let's not go. No, we will be in so much trouble if we get there. Starfleet will not enjoy this escapade about, and then they land there and it's just all equal rights. Everyone's just really nice to each other. There's a statue of Lutan being torn down.
Yeah, that'd be good.
That's the only one. And everyone would love the shit out of that. That would be great.
They would. So, the Diviner, I know that's not his name anymore, but I can't remember his real name. So he gets in touch.
Chernobyl is his name.
And he's letting us know that Horsensia, the villain from earlier in the show, has basically been using this advanced technology. And I really like the visual of that she's got these domes, but time passes differently within the domes. So she's able to build these huge armies really, really quickly. It's a really cool, like, we've talked about how they do so many different types of time travel and everything in this season. But I think this is something that we've not really seen before. And this could be like a whole episode storyline unto itself. The idea that you can accelerate the building of weapons through time displacement. It's a really cool idea.
She's literally created two separate times. It's with accelerated time in them.
Yeah. And they point out, obviously, we're going to find out where she's got it from. But the mystery is kind of, well, where's she getting all this from? No one's got this technology. Even they don't have it in the future. And this is the point where she attacks. And, yeah, Voyager and the Protostar are immediately on the back foot. But we get this thing where Chakotay's like, well, you haven't got time to do both of them, so I'm going to lead the Protostar. And Chakotay, he picks Gwyn as his number one, and she immediately picks her crew.
he immediately goes Protostar crew.
Yeah.
It's like Protostar crew assemble.
Yeah. Oh! Yeah, it is. I love it. And I love it every moment. Like, oh, all these things they do in Prodigy, some of them I'm sure should seem cheesy, but nothing ever does. You just always get excited for these guys, like,
yeah,
and it always makes sense to the plot. There's a few leaps of logic here and there with, like, you know, with letting basically children pilot a ship, but one, like, if you get over that kind of small thing, it all just works.
To me, this makes sense because the only crew available that know the Protostar systems are these kids.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, it makes
perfect sense that they're the ones that know the ship. Let's bring them on board. They know the systems.
Yeah.
But if you think how tightly you have to plot it so you don't think about the fact that they're
on
the ship. Like the fact that, like you say, they've had years of a couple of years of experience on the ship.
Yeah.
They've bonded with Chakotay now, so you've got that already baked in. It's just all ready for this moment. And the way they keep on doing that with so many things is just wild to me. It's just it's great.
And
so,
how to separate off the characters that they need to separate off.
Yeah.
You have on the way, you have the three cadets that we saw earlier that are piloting the, I can't remember the name of the shuttles that Paris designed.
But they
do mention that the Paris designs, the Mark II of it.
The Mark II Nova Flyers.
That's it.
Is what they're called.
And isn't that lovely to hear that, like, Paris is still out there, still kind of designing ships, still, like, you know.
And it makes sense that it's still designing little ships that'll do that amazing and do stuff. It designed Delta Flyer and it's carried it on.
As I didn't notice that the heartthrob can.
But, and this is where we get Korn gets injured. So she's injured. They call the doctor. The doctor's too busy. So we get Zero.
Yeah.
Possibly the medical already goes, I'll take you to sick bay. I'll come help with the issue. So we get Zero's left on the ship, which is where we need Zero.
You got down.
Then we get Chakotay sort of nudges to other cadet. Look, ask him. And he goes, can you really fly? Well, it can go fast.
That's a great line.
And Del, like, I think this for me was the moment. I completely agree with you, Jim, about, like, earlier on with him not choosing Captain Hook. I didn't even notice that bit, but that's so true. But I think this is a moment where he's like, you know what? I'm a pilot. I'm not a captain.
This is it. This is where they're all finding the place, because Dal is going to be a pilot. Zero goes to help the doctor. Gwyn is the first officer.
But it's like
they're all being slotted where they belong.
But this also puts you in a nice place where you haven't got Dal going on to Protostar Chakotay and being antagonistic about Chakotay. You've got all of, like we say, everyone has gone where they need to be and what they're going to be good at.
I
think at the beginning where Dal doesn't call it Captain's Log, I think that is him subconsciously saying, but he's not aware he's letting it go. Whereas this moment, I think he chooses to let it go. He's like, this is the moment which leads to something later on which we won't reference. Not forward for
I'm needing, like, I want to be captain, but I'm great. I've captained us, but I'm a great pilot.
He is the Monday Paris.
And ultimately, though, at this point, the end of episode one, they're losing the battle, and we see
there's like loads of battle in episode one before we even get there. We have quantum torpedoes firing all sorts.
Exactly. This is why I have relatively sparse notes compared to usual, because there is so much action and we find out, we get the second return of Wesley Crusher. Now, I don't think it was as much of a surprise as the first time he came back in Prodigy, but I'm glad that we brought Wesley back and he didn't just explode back on the planet
I don't think any of us thought, though, this was the way he's going to come back. Like, the idea of him being held prisoner as the traveler.
Can we just talk about, like, the the space battle and all that, because the space battle, before we get to the reveal at the end, animation is absolutely amazing what they do here. With there's so many different things going on. You've got Voyager is trapped by this beam, and there's a countdown, and it's gonna be destroyed. Protostar under Dakota's just trying to avoid being hit by anything. You've got the fighters and drones chasing each of the fighters all over the place.
Yeah.
And they work out what they've got. It's Dal, is it Dal who goes, well, we'll use the Protostar to lock on because they can't get the fighters close enough?
I think so, yeah.
And then proton torpedoes fire. Sorry, the lock on with Protostar, quantum torpedoes, and there's a huge explosion, but it doesn't do...
No.
It takes out the weapon, but it doesn't actually destroy anything because all the drones stop it.
Yeah.
And I love also how hopeless
then we get a huge thing fired at the at Voyager, and this is where we stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I loved it when they had the kind of hopelessness of Voyager as well. Like, Janeway being... on a very extremely rare occasion being out of her depth, and just the idea that obviously we'll see in part two that they get saved by the Protostar, but it's just, it's kind of nice to put Janeway on the back foot in a way which sometimes seems a bit contrived, because you know, oh, what, Janeway can't work her way out of this situation, but she's worked her way out of X, Y, and Z. This time it feels fully earned, it feels fully hopeless, and genuine stakes as well. It's really nice.
Yeah, and it's all really well paced and everything. The sort of peaks and troughs, and the heroic moments, and the moments of despair when it looks like the good guys are going to lose.
Like, not being funny, like, we've only talked about the first episodes here so far, and we've talked about it for twice as long as it was on, and we've actually really gone fast over the whole battle.
Yeah.
We did go fast.
So part two, then, they start to actually fight back now, the good guys. But this is where you get, and I've used a really technical term in my notes, which I'll repeat here. They get a big thing stabbed into the ship, basically.
Big stabby thing.
Big stabby thing gets stabbed into Voyager. And we find out that this is actually giving off sort of temporal radiation. And effectively, it's making time speed up. Have I got all this right? It's like emanating this radiation, which is speeding up time around it.
Like, I get the impression that what she's used as a weapon here is the same thing that's created this time.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
On the planet, because we've got time is accelerated inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, because originally I thought that as soon as they say temporal energy, I'm like going, oh, okay. So Voyager's going to blow up, then there's going to be a time rewind somehow because of the temporal
energy. Voyager would never do that.
No. And Star Trek's never done anything.
What, you mean we'd have a reset back to the start of the episode?
Not to the start.
Never. Not in Star Trek.
They've got enough time to solve it. It's sort of like in... Galaxy Quest, when they have the, like...
the Omega 13.
Seconds, it's like, well, what would be the point in that? Well, maybe if you just made one poor decision, you could choose something different. Or even the episode Cause and Effect with Data, obviously.
Yeah. You know,
I just felt we were building up for this, and I love the fact they didn't get... Like, I will never usually choose not to have something to do with time travel, and this time I was so glad not... Because it was, I never want Prodigy to be obvious, because it never is. It never.
This is really clever because we've got.
Gives me the episode I really want.
Like, this is really clever because, like, the whole scene's whole story arc is about you've got to send the Protostar back in time to where it should be. And we've had time travel with Jacoty and all sorts, and we've got there's temporal stuff happening on, I can't remember the name of the planet.
Translaw.
There's temporal stuff happening on Translaw. We've got temporal weapons being used. and there's no time travel.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Again, it builds you up, so you're expecting something, then it gives you something like you weren't expecting, which always feels better. But it's something satisfying. It's not just like something different for the sake of being different.
No, it's really clever.
Really good. One thing I just did want to quickly chuck in is Gwen. Something I noticed, which they never call out, which I kind of like, it's just there, is that since the protostars come back, her time things settle down. Like, she isn't phasing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. She's been sort it's of just phasing that, out.
I was waiting for them to comment, but they don't. But I like the fact that they
and
just
all well, of
they
this.
Do say, they do say several times in the first episode, we need to protect the protostar. It can't be destroyed or everything.
Oh, yeah, they reference that, but they don't reference how the she stabilized. It's just there.
It does get mentioned, doesn't it, at one point? We need
they
to
mention Gwyn, like when Jellicoe's ordering them to not go, they do say, well, hang on, we need to save Gwyn as well. It's not just about that. But
and at the beginning of the episode, on the when he's doing the log, he does say that... now we've got the ship back, we'll be able to save Quinn, but they don't reference the fact that she stabilized.
You're right.
It just seems to be there. I just thought it was kind of nice.
And all of this is beautifully setting up this situation where Zero is the most obvious person, and the episode positions it as the only person who can actually save the day.
Well, can I just point out to Georgia, what she means is that the name... high state of temporal polarization.
Not the Chronoton.
We covered this last week.
No, exactly. It's when the Chronoton particles are vibrating at a different pace. That's what causes the laws of luck to change. Oh no, that was the neutrinos spinning in a different direction.
May I just give you a pat on the head, Joe? Did you not even understand basic temporal mechanics?
Yeah, I mean, come on. That's temporal mechanics 101. That's a few episodes back.
I was going to say something there, but it's good because that one was...
Zero's been set up as the one who can save the day because they say, oh, that my body is... lasts longer than a human body, which, to be fair, is contradictory to what we've been told, because that body we've been told is fragile right from the start. Maybe back on the planet that it was on, it was designed to last longer, but we know that as soon as they left, it's not the hardiest.
It basically doesn't... Anything that happens to it, it has no healing factor, so any injury lasts, so... the slightest stub of a toe and the toe's gone forever. You nick your finger and it's gone forever. So I think it's that sort of thing. There's no healing factor.
They did something similar in Torchwood when Owen, I believe, was the character. Yeah, Owen died in the series, but he was brought back to life. But every injury he had, like, he was effectively...
Oh, I remember that. Yeah,
he was permanent. But yeah, I mean, I got from the dialogue, the way I interpreted it was that it's like they knew that the body was going to die, but they didn't realize it was going to be this quick, or, you know, that it was going to
die.
Because they didn't, I don't think they out and out said that any injury was just completely, but I don't think they knew even like how much, like an injury would never heal fully, but maybe it wouldn't heal a bit. You know, I think there was some gray area, and this just establishes it's dying every time you get injured, like you say. If you lose your big toe, your big toe's gone, you know. It's
and like, this sets up Zero to be incredibly heroic. But also Jankum has to jump into action with I need to build the body now really quickly.
Are we doing Zero's last moment now, or are we doing that?
Not just yet. No, so we've got a few other things going on, like in the space battle with Dal and Nova Squadron or whatever they are, they come to realize that the drones can predict what they're going to do because they're going from the Starfleet playbook.
From Wesley.
Yeah.
Exactly. And this becomes the moment where Dal can go, well, hang on, I think a bit outside the box. I mean, it's a story that's been done over and over and over, and you used to get bits where Kirk and Spock, where Kirk can be like, you know, you need to take a guess, Spock, and all of this. Yeah. So it's not something new, but it fits Dal's character brilliantly, and it works really well in this context.
Also, for me, in this modern day and age, I think this really reads like a neurodivergent character. So I think he's got ADHD very clearly from what we've seen, or a very good allegory for with people, like myself, with ADHD. The fact that he's intelligent, he knows how to do stuff, but kind of reading and planning stuff is something he struggles with, is something we've seen all throughout. And this, the moment where he gets to show, it's like, well, the fact that I think differently and the fact that I do things differently, yeah. I think that's so hopeful for people who struggle with similar things like I did as well. And I feel like, in a way that Spock wasn't, he would have been a role model for me and hopefully for other
people
who struggle with this stuff.
Like, it's not just that anything to ADHD or anything. He's also not been with Starfleet for a long time. He's not learnt to fly how Starfleet do. He's learnt to sort of look at what's happening and react to it. He's reactionary as opposed to, I follow a book. These are the maneuvers, and these are cadets that have been taught all these maneuvers and flying formation, where you have to fly in formation, you have to be very strict with what maneuver you're doing.
But if you go back to the episodes where he's in the academy, while they're all learning that, he's bugged off because he can't concentrate.
Yeah.
That's where, for me, it becomes a...
I think there's definitely something there.
I can see the point on that, but I think there's also that, because of his experience, he hasn't been brought up through the academy thing, so... He has his own experience.
Yeah, I mean, that element of it is very much like the Buck Rogers thing, that they always had him being the one who, you know, I'm not from this century and I do things by the seat of my pants and blah, blah, blah. This is generally better than Buck Rogers. But anyhow.
When he comes back.
Don't let Bill Hayes say that.
What was his name?
Brad.
Gil Gerard, when he comes back with a reboot, you will be laughing on the other side of your
body.
He told us.
Yeah, he did tell us that reboot was well on its way. And he was going to play the president of the universe. I still have my issues with Gil Gerard, because I bought one of his t-shirts and I washed it once and now it wouldn't fit a pygmy. So whoever you get to supply the material, Gil, change it.
Is a pygmy just you as a pig?
I mean, it won't fit a pig. A pygmy. Unless it was a micro pig. Pygmy. I get it. It's a good one.
I mean, it wasn't, but thank you. I appreciate
that. Yeah. So, Zero gets to the big thing. Oh. And basically, they can't shut it off. All they can do is redirect it to fire at another Starfleet ship. Which, okay, we'll give you that, because it leads to something dramatic. So now you get... Yeah,
so I can't access its on-off switch.
No.
But I can access its entire guidance system.
But only if it's directed at another Starfleet thing. Ship. It can't shoot at anything else.
it is sort of like...
Yeah,
on-off switch would be easier than
you think.
Maybe though they thought of the on-off switch thing, but you've got something like, you know, because they're really clever and they're really kind of the best of Starfleet. They figured out that it works on a Starfleet signature, so they could fool its sensors. I mean, it's a blarney, but it's like it kind of works. You know, it's like
we'll let it go because it works. It works.
I think it's one of those that it's a definite MacGuffin.
But I could see an argument why you would protect the on-off switch first, because that's the most obvious system to turn it off.
Yeah. Whereas
falling it into it being, I mean, it's sort of like, there's a way of excusing it, basically.
Yeah, it's been programmed to attack Starfleet vessels only. And it's obviously a precaution that they've put in place so it can't be turned against them. Okay, I'll give them that.
But it means we can launch it at Majel's ship, which if they do, the Boothby supernova maneuver, they can probably trick it into firing back at Horsensia's ship, which is just cool. So we'll let this go.
And is this the bit where Zero sacrifices themselves?
Yeah, this is where Zero...
The Andorian first officer, don't we? When it first hits, he gets caught in the blast wave, and that's how they know it's aging stuff. Because he's in it for a split second, and he's, like, frail and old, and...
Yeah.
And that, and the, like, Zero goes scan inside, and they can see that the ship's aging, it's got rust, and like we're talking titanium and what and magic space metals,
yeah,
and all that.
No, sorry, space magic metals. Let's keep on brand here. Let's keep on brand.
Space magic metals,
and it's space rust.
It must be space rust because, strictly speaking, it's only iron that rusts, and the ship's not made of iron.
Yeah.
Can I? Okay. This might be a bit of a swing, but this is what made me think of, and I wonder if the writers on some level threw this in there. Mm-hmm. Obviously not for the younger audience, but when Zero goes to sacrifice himself, one thing I thought of was watching somebody, like Russell D. Davis did a thing, It's a Sin, about the AIDS pandemic, and you saw like these people, based on just expressing love, end up in a situation where they died alone in the efforts of love, if you will. It's a bit poetic of me, but like, just given that Zero's journey has been so much about, obviously about trans and about kind of like finding yourself and everything, and kind of like there's steps on that journey sometimes to find yourself and your body and all this. It really felt somehow for me when they were sacrificing their body, it felt a bit like, you know, just reminded me of those dramas about the AIDS pandemic and how someone kind of died for, like, they didn't have to, but they did it because they love people. I don't know, just something it made me think of. I wonder if that was somewhere, because it feels like it's a very LGBTQ storyline, certainly.
Yeah, it definitely is.
And maybe that's just why I thought of that, but I wonder if they did that on purpose. I
do have a question about why it had to be Zero.
Because go on.
We have the Doctor, and the Doctor says, I can't. Bear in mind, the Doctor's a hologram, and the Doctor says, I can't go because the hologram emitters might be corroded. Not that they are, just that they might be. But what about his mobile emitter?
That would, as soon as he stepped into it, that would rust away to dust, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Would it?
Well, if the...
Because if we've got 24th century... space magic metals that are only just starting to show a bit of rust and metal fatigue. He's got 27th century space magic hollow emitter.
Yeah, but they got really cheap in the 27th century. Right. And I just thought it was very
cowardly of the Doctor, actually. It's also, not like, because they might be corroded, I can't go in because the hollow emitter.
Oh, yeah, the Doctor pussy in it, yeah.
I've got it. Because it's Tom Bosworth, whatever the name of his character was, in Future Tense, who gave him the hollow emitter. Mm-hmm. We don't know if he literally got the hollow emitter from the ship or if he replicated it using their schematics. So he could have replicated it using 20th century, I think it would have been.
I think he actually got a 27th century one. I don't think
don't say that clearly.
Replicated, Starfleet would have replicated it, and other holograms would have it. Especially hologram Janeway.
The point is, they use it,
really pisses in the wind of the Prime Directive.
Anyway. Yeah, the point is, the Doctor can't do it, so Zero gets to do it.
Well, because he didn't want to.
And whether or not that idea about the AIDS pandemic, it really feels like maybe that is a nod for some adults in the room. I don't know, but it's just that beautiful line that Zero delivers, and they say, I do this for my family.
It's
sweet, it's a sweet moment, and again, that thing of self-sacrifice, and it feels like just another important step on finding themselves and
yeah, and
who they ultimately will be. It's just
yeah, so and that leads into what happens at the end of the episode with Zero, is that Jankum does manage to build the new body, and it this is sort of the ultimate culmination of everything for Zero, because they got the body from the planet, but that wasn't them, whereas Jankum's made this body that looks like them but has yeah. all of the feeling and everything as well. So that does bring Zero's journey in that respect to a close anyway.
Yeah, and as much as I love I love the kind of what I'm going to call the David Bowie human suit. Like it's kind of like I love the fact they kind of play with, because I feel like our expectation is, oh, once they've got a human suit, isn't that the pinnacle of everything? But no, they want to look like they always have seen themselves.
Yeah, they want to look like form. Them.
That's them. And, like, it's only our human bias, basically, which makes
yeah, sense and,
that they should want the human form. I like that kind of playing with our
That's sort of when I think it becomes sort of most apparent that it's an allegory to the trans experience, because you get Zero sort of outright saying, like, you know, finally I can look like me again, you know, and it, you know,
and feel like me. Yeah.
And feel like me. So it's yeah, it's great stuff.
Yeah.
Also when Miguel touches them on the arm.
Yes.
That's a nice, like, you feel like Zero's gonna get some later. So I'm gonna say, I think they're age appropriate to say that comment.
I was about to say, it's just strange that Zero feels more comfortable or more natural as him in a mechanical suit than he did having his own flesh and body.
I think that's because that's who they've always been, you know, and that was the body that they chose and made for themselves, but it didn't have the feelings. And now they've got both, which is, you know, it's where they want to be kind of thing.
Yeah, also, I mean, in my head,
means
they're
you
all
have to buy another action figure if they'd have been selling action figures.
Also, see, in my head,
this is why the new suit should have looked different.
Also, in my head, they're all like 17, 18, maybe Rock's a bit younger, but I mean, Zero could be infinite years old. You don't know. Like, Majel, I just like the fact that it's a teenage romance and they're just going to have some good time being young, attractive people and having a good time together. I just love it. I'm like, ooh, go Zero.
Majel's having a word with Jankum, like, can you put a couple of extras when you... know what I mean?
A few extra sensors down there, shall we say.
That pneumatic hand thing that you've got might come in handy if you put one of them on. Anyway, so the end then is they have to go back to Solum, and Horsensia gives us a true villain sort of monologue at the end, like Starfleet isn't ready for what comes next.
We do see that. It's like Janeway called for help, and it's like there's no help for us. It's days away, even one ship we spread too thin.
I do like that, because it's like, yeah, they established that Wesley had shown her one future and personally not shown her others, and she says that and then goes, yeah, it's like but yeah, you've totally given me tactics about these guys. Like, obviously Starfleet's too far away, like you say. Oh, that was really great. It was, can I also just give a shout out to a line which Janeway says earlier, which you say about the ultimate villain speech. She is the ultimate when the tide changes in a fight thing, where she goes like, maybe we'll win this fight just yet, and it's like, I punched the air in my bedroom on my own when that moment happened. That's like, that's what this show does to me. Like, can you think of many shows where you get that excited, where you'll just punch the air when you're just on your own? But this show does it to me time and time again. It's so
beautiful. Oh yeah, it's definitely, it does have those punch the air moments, and it's great.
It is amazing. Like, you can see that some of the show is obviously like that for the younger audience, but This shows how good it is, because we're adults, we haven't got kids, and we're just loving watching this show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even think there's many moments where they dial it down for the kids. There are a few, like, and we call them out when they come up, but generally, like, if you just put this into a live-action Star Trek, I don't think there would be many more moments than in any Star Trek where you go, well, that bit's a bit convenient. That's basically it. But the reason why they're doing the convenience is for the kids. So there's actually a reason behind the convenience, as opposed to with the other shows where you go, it's like, well, that's a bit of just a plot hole. That's you've just really manipulated that because you didn't have time to explain it or plot it out, you know. Whereas this never does that. It's always for a reason, even if that is just because we've got to make it a kid-friendly show.
And it's really doing a good job of setting up the final stretch of the season. Like the fact that, you know, they're not ready for what comes next, but after what we've just seen, which was pretty much an ass whooping, you know, it's setting up a big, big finale, which I know we've got two episodes before we get to the two-part finale, but this season has so much momentum.
Season finale.
Yeah.
I'm sticking with it being season finale.
I hope it's just a season finale and not the finale.
I really hope so. No, I think that... I mean, again, I might just be trying to convince myself of this, but there is at least some good faith argument that where the rights are a bit more complicated and how it all works out, there might be more negotiation. So the fact they haven't announced it doesn't necessarily mean anything. It's not...
No, it doesn't.
Great that they haven't yet, but it's still very possible.
Netflix can take a long time as well.
They can?
Yeah, they can.
Like, I watch... I've had a go up One Punch Man.
Oh, yeah.
And that had, like, 4 or 5 years between season one and two because it took them so long to go, oh, yeah, make us another season of that. That was really good.
Yeah, it can be.
It's
bizarre.
Just really weird in Netflix how they operate.
Yeah, and you look at something like Futurama, which has been cancelled, I think, at least twice, but has come back again and had another run.
Family Guy as well.
Yeah,
I think about half a dozen times that's been cancelled.
So you never know.
Yeah.
But either way, we will be back next week to cover the next two episodes. In the meantime, you can get hold of us all the usual places. We're at RetrekPod on X, we're RetrekPod@gmail.com. We're on all the socials, including Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
Still haven't put a video out, and you all know why.
Yeah, so check out loads of content on there. And Dr. Squee, what have we got going on the Dr. Squee show?
As if you don't know, young man. Tomorrow I'm getting Jim to join me. Essentially, I had a guest lined up, had to pull out last minute. So Jim's going to join me, and we're going to talk about the new Beetlejuice film. Don't say it one more time. And if we get time, a bit of Terminator Zero.
Yeah, which is not related to Zero from Prodigy, just to make it clear. Though that, can you imagine if Zero was a Terminator? That'd be a twist. Anyway, we haven't got time to fan fiction all that at the moment. So yeah, we will be back next week to cover the next two episodes. We hope that your week goes fast.
And doesn't drag on.
Doesn't drag on. And thanks for trekking with us this time. We will see you next time on the Retrek.
Thank you. Goodbye.
LLAP.